Vermont Viewpoint is a public affairs program produced and funded by WDEV and the Radio Vermont Group. We welcome listener feedback. Email your comments to vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com.
Good morning. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. I'm Rick Sengary. We are going to have Jazzy John Wilson in here at 9:30 for our continuing celebration of WDEV at 90 as we keep beating the all-stars of this station. At 10, we're going to head up to Burlington to hear what's happening at Burlington City Arts and why they want to hear from you about how to celebrate New Year's Eve. And we'll finish the day with open phones, probably a lot of Sox talk, I'm going to guess. But first, we head to Barrie and the Vermont Granite Museum. A couple of weeks ago, we had a nice tour of the overall museum. Today, we're going to spend some quality time getting to know a beautiful exhibit at the museum called Notable Sculptors of Barrie Gray Granite. And we'll meet the photographer, Nan Carl Beauregard. Nan, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Thank you. It's lovely to be with you.
Lovely to have you. Listeners, if you've got a question for Nan about the exhibition or about photography, you can give us a call, 244-1777. Or 877-291-8255. You can also email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Nan, when did you really start to take photography seriously?
Well, I think probably when I was born. My dad was a photographer. And one of the bedrooms was a dark room. So even when he wasn't photographing or using it as a dark room, it was the dark room. So I kind of grew up with that real interest in what was he doing in there and what was it like. So I've always admired his work, and you know, I played around a lot, but it wasn't really until I was an adult that I started taking photography seriously. I was a Canon photographer. And really enjoyed that, but it was heavy, and I was traveling a lot, and I was interested in being traveling lighter, for one thing, but also being able to be more spontaneous rather than to pick out a big camera and shine it forward. So then I went to a mirrorless camera, which is a lot smaller and a lot more compact, and has a pretty good punch for its size. And that was a really good stay for a while. But then again, you know, it was always having to get it out. And yep. So I was interested in taking photographs of everything, of people and places where I was traveling. So that kind of inspired me to go into something that was much lighter.
Yeah, it does. Now, what is it about capturing images that gets you really excited?
Well, that's a great question. Certainly, as a as I said, I was traveling back and forth to London twice a year, and so I was really interested in making sure to take people along with me. I was working with a lot of people who couldn't travel or didn't travel, and so I wanted to show them where I was and that the world was a big place. And a good place, and a place that we all could be comfortable in different ways. So I started just taking pictures of everyday scenes, you know, with where I was staying. I would do my neighborhood. I would take pictures of the news agent or the hardware shop or the people crossing the street, or I would take a picture of the people washing the windows, just kind of everyday life. So that it was part of all of us. And then also, it was a way for me not to feel alone. It was a way for me to feel like I was part of the bigger whole. And so that was kind of the start of storytelling, of project-based photography. So it's those images that make me think. It's images for conversation and story that really interest me. So that's both people and places.
Well, from looking at your portfolio on your website, which is nancarlbeauregard.com, the first thing that strikes me is your eye for finding, you know, what is photogenic in what you're observing all around you. How do you zoom in on what's going on and make a great photograph?
Well, I think everybody has their own eye. And so I always encourage people to find what that is. For me, it's about images of possibility. And I know that there's lots of things that are not going well, but I'm really trying to put out images of possibility, images of unifying, or images that are interesting and that create that conversation that gets people engaged in talking with each other. So I'm looking for things that might be a little different, or things that make me smile, things that make me feel something, things that make me have some kind of emotion. Last year, one of the projects that I did in addition to the notable sculptures was to go out at first light every morning and take a photograph and write a meditation about it. And so that was a way of being where I was without traveling and getting to know my neighborhood, where I live, and just to take pictures that were about the land, basically, because there weren't very many people in my life at that time. So it's that what makes me smile, I think.
You mentioned that your father was a photographer. Did you learn from him, or did you train, go to school for photography, take classes? How did you get to know photography?
Well, I did learn from him, but not really the mechanics. I learned more about the excitement. It made him smile. It made him excited. It made him exciting to be with. It made for some really long-term memories that have sustained both my brother and I throughout time. And we always think of him with that excitement. I think for my training, I did take classes at university, and I took a lot of classes with a photography group that I was involved with when I lived in Tucson. The thing that's happened for me as an iPhone photographer is that I really do take iPhone photography seriously, not just as a snapshot camera. And I took the classes, online classes, with the iPhone Photography School that Emil Pakarklis runs. And he's out of Latvia, Riga, Latvia. And he studied, by the way, at Worcester College in Ohio.
The Fighting Scots.
Yes, he's got his American stay there. And I am from Ohio as well.
Oh.
So I studied that, and I have really enjoyed his work and his classes. He always is doing something new and different. And I've gone back and forth in looking at his classes. And also, when I travel, my husband and I will often engage a local photographer to take us to see their neighborhood from their eye. And that's a fabulous way of getting to know an area through a photographer's perspective. So I'm always studying. This year I've taken several classes with the Santa Fe photography workshops. They're fabulous. I've taken iPhone photography classes with them and Zoom classes. And then I'm currently engaged in a workshop with Maine Media on handmade zines. So I'm somebody who loves to learn and keep up with what's going on. And I also like to teach. And for me, teaching what I want to learn. So I teach iPhone photography, and that keeps my brain active and challenged by people asking me questions.
Well, when I look through your website and your portfolio, the photos are stunning. And then when I read that you use just an iPhone, I thought, that can't be right. They're amazing, which is, you know, people take nice photographs with their iPhones. You know, we all have, you know, that shot every once in a while. It's like, wow, that was really great. Mm-hmm. but you do a really great job. First of all, the accessibility, the weight was the reason, right. I guess, you kind of went to that. But what is the key to taking great iPhone photography?
Well, like any tool, the better you know it, the better the photographs will be. Any camera is that way. I think for me, one of the things I had to learn, and I have to continuously learn, is not to expect it to be a Canon or a Nikon or a Leica camera. That's not its purpose. That's not what it does. If you expect it to do that, you won't get good photographs. So if you're out now and about and you see this beautiful bank of trees across the lake and you see the reflections in the lake and you want to capture it, and you take it with your iPhone camera, you're going to be very disappointed because it's too far away. You can't get the detail. You don't have there's no story in that bank of trees, however beautiful they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important that you know what's possible with your tool. One of the things that is really important is to zoom with your feet. And that means that, you know, you have to get as close as possible. My husband can't watch me take a lot of photographs because I scare him to death. And I'm a risk taker anyway.
Oh, my man.
So I'm always getting my feet wet, or I'm always on the brink of something. And I'll come back to that in a minute because there was something that scared me in this project. But, you know, so you want to know, you want to know your camera. You want to zoom with your feet. You want to know that you can manually set the focus and the exposure on your iPhone just by pressing on it, just pressing anywhere on the screen, particularly where you want it to focus. And so I've been finding that I experiment with where I set that focus when I'm taking landscape photographs, particularly now with the colors. So it's zoom with your feet. Use the manual settings that you can. I have to say I've just graduated to an iPhone 13 Pro, and I'm loving it. Oh, my goodness. It's just the feel of it is wonderful. The other thing I'd like to just say is that the iPhone camera tends to go towards blue. Your photographs might look really blue.
Mm.
So it is important to correct the white balance. And I use a free app called Snapseed. And besides the fact that it's a powerful app, I try to, for my type of photography, I try to spend no more than 3 minutes editing a picture. I have done more and I will do more, but that's kind of the basic. And the first thing I do is to check the white balance and to see if I need to change it. And then I might go to a cropping or a some basic edits.
Gotcha.
And a lot you can do on your iPhone too, but that white balance, that's really important. And that you can't just edit on your iPhone.
And the name of that app again was Snapseed?
Snapseed.
Okay.
Snapseed. It's a free app.
Okay. Nan, the exhibit at the Granite Museum is called Notable Sculptors of Barry Gray Granite. So what will people find in this exhibit?
Well, the exhibit really does showcase the really talented people that are currently working in with Barry Gray Granite. So I started it, though, with a nod to the history of sculpting in Barry in particular and with Barry Gray Granite. You'll find some, I think, beautiful pieces of Ilya Corti, who was the person who was who died in the early part of the 20th century through a political disagreement.
Mm.
And the sculpture of him is just truly amazing. It sets the standard for all sculptors currently working, and it's a beautiful piece. And then also there are a couple of pieces about the Bursa family. Their son Luigi carved a statue of what sometimes is called the board angel, sometimes it's called the sitting angel. But she's just a fabulous sculpture and just has such personality. And I hope I captured that. I think I did.
Hmm.
And during the snow season, I captured both Ilya and the Bursa angel during the snow. The other thing about the Bursa family is that the son who carved the parent's statue himself has a very significant and powerful statue. It's called the Dying Man, and he is dying of silicosis. And when he knew he was dying, he asked a friend of his to sculpt him. And you can see in the sculpture where his back is part of the granite, and that's to signify that his lungs had become granite.
Wow.
It's a very powerful statue, and I captured that one, I think, in a good way. And then I went on to take a look at the six sculptors, which include Giuliano Ceccanelli, Gary Sassi, George Kozanowicz, Heather Milne-Ritchie, Ryan Mays, and Chris Miller. Those are the six that I highlighted. And you'll see pictures of them or their hands and some of their work. Whether it's public art or whether it's the monumental art that's present in Hope Cemetery in particular. So those are some of the things you'll see.
Well, Nan, before the break, you were instructing us to focus with your feet, and you mentioned that it almost got you in trouble when you were photographing this exhibit. So tell us what happened there.
Oh, well. Yes, I was. Don't tell Rock of Ages. I kind of crossed the street, and there was a place you were not supposed to be, and I was there, and they have this stone wall overlooking the quarry, and it's so beautiful, and you know, I just kind of climbed on the wall and put my feet over it. And I thought, well, if I fall in, that's okay because, you know, I can swim. And then I looked down and I said, oh, there's really no way out if I fall into this quarry. So this is when my husband just kind of walked back to the car because I just scared him. And then when I got, you know, I took a couple pictures of the quarry and I did get some good pictures. So I got off the wall and I went back and I stood. By the wall where I wasn't in any danger. And I looked down and that's when I saw, oh, that's scary. I wouldn't have been able to get out. So I did learn that maybe I need to be more careful, but that probably lasted for about a week, I think.
What is it about these granite sculptures that you have found particularly enticing and amazing?
Well, I have to say, I fell in love with each one of the sculptors, you know, a little bit. And so I just got mesmerized by their talent and how they made rock dance. You know, Giuliano Ceccanelli, he is the master, no question. He works in three dimension. Any way you look at any of his work, there's something interesting to see. And so it's that in the round part. And you can see the folds in his Mr. Pickwick at in front of the library in Barrie. The fold in the back of his coat and his hair and his glasses. It's just phenomenal. And to think about doing that from a piece of rock and making it dance and making that light dance across it. I was mesmerized by that talent, that you could look at a piece of rock and know what it was going to look like at the end is just a mystery to me. So I just really enjoy them. I think Heather Milne-Ritchie, she as a woman and as a person is amazing. She's joined the province, the exclusive province of men, and she's not lost her sense of who she is as an artist, as a sculptor. Her angels have a qualitative and sensitivity that are rare and phenomenal. And so she's learned to be a great sculptor, and she's also a very good businesswoman. So it was each one of them had something unique. Gary Sassi is the sensitive person, and he really taught me a lot about the history, and I started to take a look at the health issues of the sculptors with his guidance. George Krzyzanowicz is from Poland, and his story is amazing. he can make roses in a vase that are amazing to look at. You want to smell the roses. Heather is she's both a public sculptor and a monumental sculptor. Ryan Mays, he had a commission of 10 gargoyles that he was working on, and each gargoyle was to be different. And this was for a man who's building a castle in New York, and he's going to have a great time with these gargoyles. They were fun to watch and watch Ryan work on, and just interesting to see. And then Chris Miller, well, he is actually the resident artist right now in the museum. And so if you go to the museum, or when you go to the museum, you'll see him working on a really magnificent piece. And he's kind of the rock star of the group.
Yeah.
He's really an amazing person. He's the fellow that sculpted Ceres, the goddess of agriculture, that stands on the top of the Golden Dome on the State Building.
Yeah.
And he goes from strength to strength to strength to strength. He is a lot of fun. So he really loves it when people come and talk to him while he's working. So that's going to be a really fun piece for the Museum of Arts and Science, and that'll be in Burlington at some point.
Mm. And Nan, only a few more weeks, I understand, to see your exhibit.
Yes. Until it'll be up until the 30th of October. I'll take it down on the 30th of October when the museum closes for the winter. And so you can see my exhibit, visit with Chris, and see the whole museum. Tuesdays through Saturdays from 10 to 4. And I encourage you all to go because it's such a unique part of Vermont, and it's so interesting to see and meet the people and see all the things that go on behind those walls that you couldn't possibly imagine.
I absolutely agree.
I really enjoy it.
Yeah. Nan Carl Beauregard's exhibit at the Vermont Granite Museum is called Notable Sculptors of Berry Gray Granite. To learn more about her photography, you can visit nancarlbeauregard.com. Nan, thank you so much for spending time with us this morning.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
It really has. Thank you. All right. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to return to speak with one of WDEV's all-stars as we celebrate WDEV at 90. It'll be Jumpin' John Wilson, and the Sox have the night off because they won. And so we'll get the full slate of the afternoon news service, the Brady Farkas show, and dinner jazz with, Jazzy John Wilson. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
At the Warren Store, we are busily preparing for the coming season of gatherings with family and friends. Upstairs, we have a stunning selection of Vermont's Laura Zindel pottery to grace your holiday table and a beautiful new line of honey-infused skincare. There are pillows and rugs to feather your nest and wooden jigsaw puzzles, toys, and games. Catan, anyone? Always free gift wrapping and still the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. So come for lunch in our Rockin' Deli and treat yourself to unique, fashionable finds upstairs. Open 7:30 to 5 daily. Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Village and WarrenStore.com.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Singeri. We are celebrating 90 years of WDEV this year. That means we have been holding events. We'll be broadcasting live from around the area. And we are taking the time to meet the many all-stars who have worked at the station all these years. This morning, we get to learn more about Jumpin' John Wilson. Johnny, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Hey, thank you, Rick. Great to be here.
Listeners to ask John a question or maybe share a John Wilson memory, you can give us a call, 244.
That might not be a great idea.
We'll leave that up to the listeners.
Yeah, it's been decades here in the area.
244-1777, 877-291-8255. VTViewpoint@radiovermont.com is the email address. There are a few skeletons in the closet, you're saying?
Well, I came to Vermont to go to college.
Yeah.
You know, as a young man, fresh out of high school.
From Boston.
From Boston, yep. Somerville by way of Woburn, Mass. Woburn. Or the Woo, as if you're really in the know, you call it the Woo.
Yeah.
And,
where'd you go to school here in Vermont?
St. Mike's.
Okay.
St. Mike's up in Winooski.
Yeah.
And settled there. And it was the 80s, and, it was a little bit crazy. Definitely. And then I moved to Stowe, and it was still the 80s, so it was still crazy.
Yeah.
And Stowe as a ski town back then it had a different rhythm. Really, right at the end of the ski day, which the town was centered around skiing. It's no longer. Now it's a four-season town. But it really was just about winter and just about skiing. After that, you know, they used to talk about playing Frisbee on Main Street.
Wow.
Yeah, and you could do that. You could do that and really not have to worry about a car for quite a while.
Yeah.
That's changed completely.
Yeah, that's not going to happen now.
Yeah. Downtown's it's a strolling venue last couple of years for sure.
It is, absolutely. So when did your career at WDEV start?
Oh, fresh out of school. I came in and I answered an ad in the Times Argus.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in the employment section. Just a regular printed ad. And it was for Sunday nights.
It's archaic now, isn't
it? Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you look in the want ads in the paper and it's kind of – well, they're coming back,
I have
to say. Yeah, the Stowe Reporter has a pretty vibrant help wanted section. But, yeah, I just answered the ad and it was Sunday nights and I got to do jazz. I got to play the Sounds of Sinatra. There was another show, a fellow named Bob Coffee had Coffee and Jazz, and he had interviews with young up-and-comers. Like he was the first guy to get really behind Harry Connick, a few other people like that. So there were things that were discovered. And then once you talk to Ken Squire, the great thing was I'd play somebody, and Ken would have seen them live and interacted with them during his days working as a club guy for Symphony Sid. So some of the greats, truly some of the greats, like Dinah Washington, Johnny Hodges, people like that.
Wow.
Real heavyweights, yeah.
Oh my.
So it was just a great thing, and I really liked the Sinatra show. Got to learn the whole Sinatra songbook from Sid Mark and the Sounds of Sinatra. Yeah, every Sunday night. Came on a great big album.
Oh right, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Used to cue it up.
Yeah.
And
yeah, to stop
it
for the commercial, to put our commercial in, start it again, yeah.
How
that was a whole different thing.
Wow, that's really cool. Now, do you remember when you came in for the interview, anything about it, you know, what you wore, what your hairstyle was, what car you drove coming in that day?
I think I actually rode my bicycle to the interview.
Nice.
From Stowe, yeah. It took about
Stowe to Waterbury?
Yeah, it takes about, 40 minutes.
So you had a nice lather up. You were good and sweaty when you got here.
Yeah, and Schuytzville Hill can be a little hairy on a bike for sure. But it was it didn't go well, I remember.
Mm-hmm. But you got the gig.
But I got the gig. Yeah, my reference was a college professor that I'd studied under who apparently didn't think much of me. So that's what management told me. We talked to Chris. It didn't go too well, really. Yeah.
So I'm loving this. You ride your bike in. You're kind of sweaty, you know.
Yep.
You get here. You kind of flub the interview.
My pants were an issue. Ken actually gave me cash once to buy a new pair of pants. I think it was $15.
Your reference was poor, and somehow you still got the gig. And all these years later, you're still with us.
Well, I've been fired twice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right.
Ken's fired me twice.
All right, well, and, we'll try to avoid number three during this interview.
It was funny. The second time, he's like, it really is about the money this time. I'm like, it wasn't about the money last time? Oh, no.
It's only what we told you
exactly.
The last time. Oh, man. Oh, gosh.
It's good, though.
Right.
They fessed up.
All right, so who are some of the people you have worked with when you first got hired here that, maybe shaped your career?
Oh, sure. Ken. I mean, Ken just has, like, a zen-like ability.
Yeah.
As a, like, the greatest radio coach in the world.
Yeah.
He doesn't say much, and he'll give you really short, succinct instructions.
Just come and talk to you.
Yeah, and I don't mean like terse or curt or anything like that. But things like, you know, be creative. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Or find something with strings. He used to say that a lot during dinner jazz. And as a young man playing,
it's like
jazz
a Zen
show,
cone that he gives you, right?
Yeah, and you don't realize how instructive it is till much later.
Right.
Like,
when you're
putting
together jazz and you're like, oh man, this could use some strings.
Strings, yeah. Charlie Parker with strings.
There we go.
How about that? That's the dinner jazz style, and just trying to pick up the show from where it was created by Charlie Ventura Jr. And some folks out there, it's kind of deep jazz, but Charlie Ventura Sr. was a great saxophone player. Became known more as a club owner later in life, a great place to play jazz and promote. He had some physical trouble that kept him from playing, but Charlie Ventura was kind of a link between the swing era and the bebop era. So he's right there in between. He introduced people like Jackie and Roy, Buddy Rich, folks like that.
Wow.
A great figure in jazz. So having Charlie Ventura Jr. and all his great jazz knowledge and Ken together, it was I learned more in the first couple months than I learned my whole 4 years at St. Mike's.
Did you come here with a jazz appreciation or did
sure?
That, yeah. So
yeah, my uncle played, or my mother's uncle, Uncle Carol was his name, played in bands. Wendell Weiler's big band. Might not ring any bells out there, but he played. He got to play with Jackie Gleason's orchestra.
Mm.
He got to attend a recording session with Billie Holiday. Said she had absolute perfect pitch.
Oh my!
And played cards with Gleason on a train once. Things like that. But he spent his last few years playing at the Prince Spaghetti House on Route 1 in Boston.
Ah.
I know it sounds kind of funny, but it was a pretty good gig. It was a 15-piece band. So it was a big band, and he just played as long as he could till finally emphysema kind of took over. But he was the kind of guy, I would go to his house, and it was a unique situation. He married my mother's aunt Muriel, who was a dancer. Now, Muriel was a dancer in, like, some of the big bands and, a dancer and kind of a partier and everything.
Yeah.
But she had five sisters who were all sort of spinsterish, and they took what a lot of Irish folks call the pledge. So as young teens, they took the pledge to never let liquor touch their lips. And I think a couple of them, like my Auntie Matt and Agra, never kissed, they said, and just lived their life that way. And to show how things are different, all my spinster aunts had entry-level jobs at Western Union, and they were all able to afford their own cottages on Cape Cod.
Oh, my goodness.
With entry-level jobs, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
things were different.
It was all that money we spend on alcohol
yeah.
that they didn't have.
that they had, yeah.
We could have palatial estates if we had just behaved through the years.
But my Uncle Carol, he knew all these players, and he was really big on Count Basie.
Mm-hmm.
He had a saying. When he wanted to affirm something, he would say, "Oh, Uncle Carol, you going to come over and help us with the air conditioner?" And say, "Like Basie's in town, buddy." And that meant, if Basie's in town, he's going to the show. So that was his way of saying, it's going to get done, I'm going to do it.
Oh,
but he always
yes.
referred to Count Basie as just the best. He
like
loved Basie.
Basie's in town. All right, John, I mentioned you've done a number of different things, including news. So how have the news operation here changed in the many years that you've been around?
Well, it's been, I think, in radio across the board, everywhere you go. It's scaled way back.
Yeah.
There used to be a lot of even the rock and roll stations used to have a designated news person, a Les Nessman, if you folks are familiar with WKRP in Cincinnati,
right.
The old sitcom. But there was always somebody, and then stations that focused on news, like DEV. We had Anson Tebbets, Brian Joyce, Nadine Martin at the State House, exclusively. And then people like Peter Frayne filing in. There was a fellow from Southern Vermont used to call in. Eric Francis and Jeff Nicholson. And it was a heavy environment. And I almost felt like it was something I couldn't do because people like Anson are just gifted.
Yeah.
Really smart. And they knew Vermont. And I'd only been here a few years. But then a tragedy happened sort of at my doorstep. A girl was murdered who had just moved to Stowe. Patty Scoville was her name. And the case became this big deal. It was at the head of a lot of controversies that the Stowe Police Department had been going through. There had been a teenage suicide that they thought wasn't handled correctly. There'd been another occasion where some local kids said they were, quotation marks, roughed up or treated roughly. And there were public meetings about this and things like that. And I lived right in town. So they said, hey, here's a tape recorder. Go get some sound. And it really started that way. And then for a little while, when the murder at Moss Glen Falls happened, they were looking for the body. It took about a week and a half. So it was a daily thing. I'd get up and I'd go with my tape recorder over to the police station and get the latest. And And that's really how it started, sort of like, can you help us out?
Yeah.
And everybody was really, really kind. And again, being on the ground floor and being in a place where you're actually working, I'd studied news and radio news in particular up at St. Mike's. We put on our own broadcast and everything. I learned more in a couple weeks here at DEV than I learned it for 4 years and thousands of dollars up at St. Mike's.
Well,
still a good experience.
That's right. All right. We have a guest who you, caller who you will recognize. Here's our friend Rusty DeWeese. Hi, Rusty. What's up?
Hi, Rick. Hey, John. out doing the hill behind my house. It's beautiful listening to the show. And I'd just like to say that John, if you don't know him, he's like something out of a Russian novel. He's like a guy that really interesting and romantic and talented. And I just want to give you a plug, John, and then I'll let you go enjoying the show. Mm-hmm. John does this Singagram thing, and I've hired him.
Right.
Like for somebody's birthday or Valentine's Day or whatever occasion. He'll go to the house of your girlfriend or your parents or something and sing, and it's just the best gift anyone can give. So plug yourself up, and I'll keep listening. See you later.
Rusty, that's a great call.
Thank you, Rusty. I forgot all
about that. First of all,
the Johnny Valentine Love Song Service, it's called.
Yeah, I will never forget how he described you, and it's so true. You are something out of a Russian novel. But is there a song you'd like to sing from your songagram? Maybe sing to me? Is there something? But this is something you do every year, what, at Valentine's Day?
Valentine's Day is the big one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've done it for about more than 10 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Some years I get nobody. Some years it just doesn't happen. I put up the posters and everything. And then other times it's come through. And I've had some unique experiences going to, you know, showing up on people's doorsteps. Usually you're not initially well received. There's a lot of, no, thank you. No, thank you. No, you don't understand. A relative paid money.
This is a gift, right?
I'm supposed to do this. But all things people know, you know, like, let's see. Well, Tony Bennett's been on my mind a lot. Mm-hmm. So I've always been enraptured by Tony's approach to song. And I heard a young singer this weekend named Bella Sanchez at the second annual Indigenous Peoples Rocks Day. What a great show that was.
Right.
Dave Keller was rocking with the headliner.
Yeah.
So
you sing,
Joe
but have
Williams.
You ever played – I mean, ever been in the band?
Sure. Yeah. In fact, the harmonica we heard is my buddy John LaRouche from East Callis. And John's a great player I met up with at something that used to be called the Green Mountain Jazz Series, which was an open mic at the T.W. Wood Art Gallery on Sundays.
Mm.
And that was a great thing for the community. Met a lot, pretty much everybody I've played with, I met through that initially, that one thing. I wish that would come back. If somebody's out there in central Vermont, bring back the Green Mountain Jazz Series.
Well, Rusty called you something out of a Russian novel. When I had Jack Donovan on a few weeks ago, I asked him who were some of the real characters that he's worked with through the years at WDEV. He just went right to – he said the number one was John Wilson. So why would he single you out of all people he's worked with? He's been here like 50 years.
Yeah, and again, this gets back to Ken. I was doing pretty straight radio. I was enjoying – the Sinatra show, I was really enjoying the dinner jazz and getting to learn new songs. And Ken would always point me in the right direction, you know, as far as instrumentalists and arrangers and going to the right place to keep the tone of dinner jazz is a certain thing we've tried to maintain over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like most everything that Ken Burns left out, we put in along with what Ken covered, you know, so we try to do that. But, I'm sorry, Rick. I lost the question.
That's all right. I want to know
why would Jack call me?
You are the biggest character he's worked with here in 50 years.
Ken took me aside once and he said, and I thought I'd been doing fine and I've been trying to do proper straight radio. And he goes, you know, I really, really wanted you to get creative. And I was like, really? And he was like, yeah, I mean, like, you mean like, comedy and David Letterman stuff? And he was like, yeah. And I never dreamed I'd have that opportunity. So I started doing skits and different things, writing scripts. It's funny, I was looking over what I have left for archives, and this was the 80s into the 90s. most of the humor at that time had an edge to it, and it was supposed to. That was the the tenor of the times. It's different now. It's a lot different now. And I was trying to find something that I could bring as a clip, but I couldn't find anything that wasn't what Charlotte asked me to not do anything incriminating when I was on your show. So this was all this material was incriminating, but it was great things like I fought Mike Tyson twice on the air. Things like that. And we had President Clinton on all the time. It was during the Clinton era, so.
Yeah, we are trying to get you through this half hour.
Drop in every
without
now and
a third firing.
Yes.
So we're getting there. We're getting
It's really scary because the three, that does seem like a that it seems like a natural, you know, the triad. It's just the threefer.
So when you're not on the air, you've done some singing, but some stand-up comedy maybe?
Sorry. Yeah, that's all right. You go ahead, sneeze, buddy. You got it.
There we go.
God bless you.
Wow.
God bless.
All right.
Is it okay to say God bless you when people sneeze now? Is that
sure?
Is that on the
Why not?
Sure. Yeah.
Whatever you like, John.
Yeah. God bless you.
You've done some stand-up comedy and
yes.
painting. You're like a house painter. A crooner.
Around Stowe, you can always find work, and throughout the area, doing remodeling and things like that. And one thing I did learn in college that was reinforced, especially by the journalism professors, was find some other type of work in addition to what you want to, what you want to do, what your goal is. Work at what you can, but find out what's out there and have something that you can always go back to.
The side hustle.
Yeah, and for me, the side hustle has been the main thing. You know, mostly working, and the main thing that I wanted to do has been kind of my side hustle, but it's worked out. It's worked out. I've had a chance to play with some great people. Michael Arnowitt out of Montpelier, John LaRouche, Dan Haley, who moved out to Oregon. I miss Dan. I miss Dan so much. He was like a musical brother. But it's okay.
Yeah.
My son plays out a lot. Plays guitar with all kinds of folks out there. He's played with Strusacker, Mark Strusacker.
Mm. We got about a minute and a half left. If you could do anything else in your career, is there something you're itching to do that you would love to maybe chalk off that bucket list?
Sure. Well, singing is really satisfying, and lately I've been busking on Main Street in Stowe.
Really?
Yeah, and I just go there and I just start singing. Elvis goes over. Elvis gets good tips.
Of course.
So, if you can whip out something like, you know, are you lonesome tonight? Do you miss me tonight? Are you sorry we've drifted apart? That'll put money in your hat.
Oh, man. I'm ready to break out my wallet here.
Really?
You are something
I should have brought
out of
my
a
hat.
Russian novel. Rusty DeWeese is so spot on.
I need
on.
To read more Russian novels.
Or write a few.
Yeah.
Sit down and write a few. You would be the great main character. I have Archer Mayer on tomorrow, and he really should write you.
Oh, yeah.
He should write you into the next book. I think it's going to be his 34th.
Do you get money for that when an author takes your life and puts it in?
I doubt it.
I do know a fellow who claims to be Joe Gunther.
Oh.
He's a former Vermont law officer, and he says Joe Gunther was modeled after him to a point where he says, and you can ask Archer Mayer this because I've always wondered. He said that he's gone to Archer Mayer and said, could you roll back the personal stuff a little bit?
Ooh.
Yeah, because he thought he was getting too close to his real life.
I'll have to throw that into the questions for tomorrow. John Wilson, host of Dinner Jazz. He has done so many other things. He is something out of a Russian novel. I want to thank you, John, so much for your years of service here and being on the show this morning.
До свидания.
There we go. All right, we're going to take a break. News is next, and then we'll be back to find out what's happening at Burlington City Arts. And today at 1 o'clock, it's Equal Time with Travin, and then we've got 120 musical minutes of The Getaway with Mr. Greg Hooker. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
At the Warren Store, we are busily preparing for the coming season of gatherings with family and friends. Upstairs, we have a stunning selection of Vermont's Laura Zindel pottery to grace your holiday table and a beautiful new line of honey-infused skincare. There are pillows and rugs to feather your nest and wooden jigsaw puzzles, toys, and games. Catan, anyone? Always free gift wrapping and still the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. So come for lunch in our Rockin' Deli and treat yourself to unique, fashionable finds upstairs. Open 7:30 to 5 daily. Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Village and WarrenStore.com.
This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. Let's take a trip up to Burlington this morning, find out what's been going on with the organization that really keeps the art scene happening in that city. We're going to chat with a couple of folks at Burlington City Arts. John Flanagan is Communications Director at BCA. John, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint. Great. And we also have Zach Williamson. He is their festival and events director. Zach, welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint.
Thanks for having me back, Rick.
Yeah, great to have you both. Listeners, to ask our guests a question about Burlington City Arts, you can call us 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. You can also email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. John, can you give us a little history of Burlington City Arts?
Absolutely, yeah. So we're going on towards 35 years now, I think the next year or so. So it started as just a janitor's closet, Memorial Auditorium way back then, when Bernie Sanders was mayor. So our executive director, Doreen Kraft, started getting things going back then. And she still helms BCA, their fearless leader. It started just as a city's art department, basically, to make arts as accessible as possible to as many Burlington residents and Vermonters as possible. And we've only grown since then. So we moved into the Firehouse Gallery on Church Street. So we have an exhibition space there. We do camps for kids in the summer. We do education classes for all ages. Arts education, and now festival events is a huge part of what we do, and partner with so many community organizations to just keep expanding, and with the goal of accessibility just really our underlying mission throughout all of it.
And Zach, as festival and events director, how are you trying to engage people to get them interested in the arts?
Yeah, you know, we, as John said, it's about accessibility and about supporting Vermont artists, so we have quite an ambitious event and festival schedule throughout the year. Just this past summer with the renovated City Hall Park, we worked hard to make that park accessible to everybody and inviting everyone. We produced over 100 events out there. And all those events feature Vermont artists. And so it's doing two things at once. It's both bringing the community to the park and keeping that new park a great and beautiful place for everyone. And it's also providing tremendous support to Vermont performing artists. Specifically now, after COVID, when so many venues were shut down, it was really awesome to work with people and say we can do a safe concert outside or a safe discussion outside and have a concert again for everyone. So it was really, really a great summer out there.
Well, Zach, just give us some of the events that BCA has been involved with during the course of the year that people, you know, might recognize.
For sure. Probably our biggest event is the Festival of Fools. So that is the street performance festival that we do on Church Street right in the end of July or early August. And we've been doing that now for 14 years. And we took a break last year, of course, but this past summer we were thrilled to be back out there and had huge turnouts for outside performances. So that's been a long-running festival. And then on a smaller scale, but we have our summer concert series, which we've had tremendous growth with over the years, featuring new bands and some kind of bands that we all know and love so much. That has been around for a long time in the old City Hall Park and then moved to Church Street in the renovation process, and then was bigger and better this summer with 24 free concerts on Wednesdays and Fridays from June all the way till September.
Wow, that's an ambitious schedule. John, you just had two exhibits finish this past weekend, but two new ones are coming up soon. So tell us about the ones that will be opening in a couple weeks.
Right, on October 22nd, we're opening two new exhibitions. So the first one, Unbound, is on our main level. These are three New England artists exploring contemporary approaches to abstraction. So it's Rachel Gross, Rob Hitzig, and Kirsten Reynolds are the artists. And I'm so excited for this exhibition.
Yeah.
I've seen some of the artists, video of the artists putting together their work, and some of these really large-scale, geometric-shaped forms that are just going to look so cool in the gallery. So each artist is kind of considering the possibilities of abstraction with a novel perspective. So it's exploring ideas related to architecture and space, So I think it's going to be really great. Our curator, Heather Farrell, is so talented. And our exhibition this past summer, Bubblegum Pop, was one of our most well-attended ever. Just, I don't know if people have been peering through the windows on Church Street, that big psychedelic, colorful, candy land thing in the middle of the gallery. But she's so good at using the space we have on Church Street, just really drawing a crowd to these exhibitions. And on the second floor, we have the first solo show of a New England artist, Bradley Borthwick. It's a sculptural installation called Objects of Empire. And so this evolved from his research at the Dorset Marble Quarry in Vermont and working with ancient Roman storehouses. So he was inspired to create these huge hand-carved facsimiles of headstone and ephemera. So these big beeswax models, really cool, really out there. The second floor is always really, really cool, kind of more niche, out there experimental art. So that's October 22nd, and they'll be up through, let me look at that real quick. They'll be up through February 6th.
All right, some time to get there for folks. Now, John, you mentioned the space there on Church Street in Burlington, which is an outstanding space. Tell people a little bit about it, because it really is kind of a neat piece of art in and of itself.
Yeah, so it used to be a firehouse. We're here on the third floor right now, and you can see where the fire pole used to be. It's a very tall, lean building right at the bottom of Church Street. It's perfect for art. It's like you said, it's a piece of art in itself and a historical building. So to have contemporary art in an old building, it's a great juxtaposition that I think really helps our exhibitions kind of pop. It's a fun building to work in. It's keeps us right in the center of downtown. We're next to City Hall
Yeah, so perfectly accessible when you're on Church Street. You can just pop in or even, like you said, look in through the windows and get a great sense of the exhibitions going on there. Zach, one of the series that I think you've been running for a while is the Architecture and Design Film Series held monthly. So tell us what takes place on the nights when you have those.
That is a unique series that has a really interesting group of people who follow that really closely. It's a curated films that runs through September, starts every September and goes through April, one film a month. And traditionally, those films happen, there's a screening on Wednesday of each month in Contois Auditorium. We work with a really great group of people who program those movies. Karen Frost, Andrew Chardain, and Lyndon McIntyre work really hard to, look at a ton of films, consider their audience, consider the pieces that are out there, and then bring these great films here to Burlington. During the pandemic, we've been able to continue that that series. It's been online for virtual viewing, and you can always see, if you go to our website, you can see the number of the days that you have access to those films. So it's actually worked really well, and perhaps, like many things in the pandemic, we've been able to reach a new audience that way, where instead of coming into City Hall, you can watch these movies online for a certain number of days each time. So we are continuing to do that programming and the screenings. We're going to reconsider our in-person aspect once we get to January, but the first four films for this fall are going to be online only. But it is a really great series and extends our reach to a whole different group of people.
Yeah, I'm so happy that you do that and are continuing that. Zach, let's talk about New Year's Eve. First of all, what is this thing called the Bright Ideas Project?
Avenue to get people involved from the ground up on what happens on New Year's Eve in Burlington. So Highlight is the new New Year's Eve event, which took over for first night. We're going into our fourth year now with Highlight. And we always knew that we wanted to, instead of kind of program the evening from the top down, saying with us deciding what's going to happen where and when, we wanted to open that door and embrace all the creativity in our community. And throw the ideas out there and let people apply and share their bright, quote unquote, bright ideas with us. So the door is wide open now through November 1st, where people can go to highlight.community and read about it, high chance that those ideas will be looking to work with everybody and help fund those ideas and help produce those events for New Year's Eve for the community.
Now, what's the deadline to submit ideas?
The deadline is November 1st, and there's two different avenues you can apply for. This is Highlight is going to be a truly hybrid event this year. So we're looking for ideas that are for in real life or IRL experiences in the Burlington area. Those could be, you know, we're always looking for outside-the-box ideas, but I think this year the more outside-the-box and the more outdoors, the better. So we're really interested in ideas that might fit in with programming at the waterfront outside or at City Hall Park outside, or if it needs to be inside, we're looking at Contois Auditorium or a warehouse space down on Pine Street at 405 Pine Street. But we're really looking for interesting ideas for in-real-life experiences. And then also an approach where you could produce a hybrid event. It could be right from your own living room. It could be from your kitchen if you want to do cooking. It could be in a dance studio. Wherever you would feel comfortable as a performer or doing anything, really, in this time, you know, dealing with COVID and crowds, if it's better for you to do it online or maybe there's something that just works better online, we're totally open to that as well.
All right. And so I think last year was virtual. And is this year expected to be an in-person event?
So you're right. Last year we did the Highlight House Party and everything was online. This year is truly hybrid. So we are selling buttons and there will be in-person experiences in and around Burlington, both outside and inside. And you can, we're hoping that we'll have a great turnout of people who are vaccinated, feel safe, want to get outside, want to share time safely with their community. We think we can do that. And for people who either don't want to travel to Burlington or want to stay home on New Year's Eve, we're happy to embrace that as well. And you can buy a virtual ticket and watch online. We're using a platform, again, just like last year, where you can kind of channel surf and visit different sessions across our platform. So it works really well, and we're really pleased to be able to do both. It is a lot to produce. It's kind of like producing two different events. Not even kind of like. It really is producing two different events, but we're going for it. And so a lot of good ideas out there through the Bright Idea Project that can apply to both.
All right. Now, John, tell us how BCA supports artists in the community.
In many ways. So for Bright Ideas, for example, so we're supporting these artists with up to $8,000 to fund their ideas. So the ideas will get as many submissions as possible and see what's viable and what we can do within the parameters of the event and fund those artists. But we also support them through the artist market. We just wrapped up. We had an artist market in City Hall Park all summer long. So giving artists a space to sell their creations, their wares, while giving them some business experience and professional development. We have studio space at our 405 Fine Studios for artists. And we recently incorporated our scholarship program into that. So we encourage anybody who's looking to take a class or get studio space at 405 to apply for a scholarship. Like I said earlier, accessibility is a huge goal for us, and we know there are serious financial barriers out there, and we want everybody to be able to produce art and have access to state-of-the-art equipment that we have at the studio. So definitely encourage that. So through these specials and events, like Zach was saying, in City Hall Park all summer, we paid all these bands, we paid all these musicians. And during COVID, we had our summer concert series as well. So we were one of the few organizations in the state that was supporting musicians financially in a time when a lot of gigs were canceled because we could do these things outside and do them safely. So Festival Fools is another example. The Buskers reported a great season, generous tips from everybody. They do get a small stipend from BCA as well. So we're always looking for new ways to support artists financially and otherwise.
All right. And what kind of need do you have, John, for volunteers there at BCA?
That is a great question. We have a lot of volunteers. We have gallery staff that works in our gallery and helps direct folks to the art. And I believe, Zach, you have a pretty robust volunteer.
Yeah, we do. We recruit volunteers gladly for Festival of Fools and for Highlight. We also use some volunteers in our general event staff program out at City Hall Park. But anyone who has an interest in gaining some experience, festival operations experience or event production experience, and is able to volunteer, we're really very pleased to always have that kind of interest. We also work with a lot of internships with the University of Vermont, St. Michael's College, and Champlain College to get some on-the-ground event training for people.
And we also have a program called Art from the Heart, which is at UVM Medical Center. So we're always looking for volunteers there as well. With COVID, it's been a little bit different. Usually we bring in person, we bring kits to people in hospital rooms to help them heal through art and connect them to art for families, staff of the hospital, patients. So right now we're looking for people to assemble kits that we can drop off or help out in other means. So if anybody is interested in volunteering with Art for the Heart, they can email me at jflanagan@burlingtoncityarts.org and I can get them to the right spot.
What kind of art projects do you take into the hospitals through Art from the Heart, John?
So many. anything from jewelry making to mobiles and crazy coloring projects, so anything. Rebecca Schwartz, who runs that program and has been doing so for a long time, is just brilliant, and she does a lot of research to match the art form to the patient and their needs, so something meditative and calming or something distracting. So the sky's the limit. If there's a patient who wants to do something specific, we could absolutely work with them to get.
John, you've added a building on Pine Street. Tell us about that. What's that being used for?
Yeah, 405 Pine. It's right across from Arts Riot on Pine Street. So that is the home of our classes and camps, as well as our studios. So we acquired that building for the memorial where we used to have our studios and our classes is deemed unsafe.
All right.
We can't be in there. So they moved into 405 a few years ago and built these studios with absolutely incredible equipment. Our jewelry making studio has all the tools and bells and whistles you could dream of. Our clay studio is fantastic. We have a drawing and painting studio there, screen printing,
digital photography, and regular darkroom photography is down there as well.
So it's just a tremendous space. If anybody's been in there, they can testify to that. But one of the issues we were running into, it's so great that we're running out of room. We're looking at ways that we might be able to expand, especially our clay department is so popular and everybody wants to work on the wheel. So we're trying to expand deeper into the studio and looking at ways that we can do that.
And didn't you have a summer music series there? Will that continue as well?
That was a partnership with Higher Ground, yeah, called Backside 405.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of fun to work with them on that and to utilize what was just a vacant parking lot and turn it into another art space. So I believe that will continue. I can't speak for Higher Ground, but I hope it does. It was a lot of fun to work with them on that.
I got to see Martin Sexton there. Nice venue, you know, outdoors. He had a lovely time being back, so it was pretty great. Let's see if we can squeeze in a call quick from Cindy, who's calling us. Hi, Cindy. What's going on?
Hi, yeah. I was up at UVM at the medical center, the hospital there, for a while, and Art from the Heart came in and dropped off some things, all sorts of different supplies once I was starting to feel a little better.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, I loved the supplies and everything that I brought, but it was more, the name is perfect for them because it did my heart really good to just have someone walk through that door and bring life to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just wanted to call in and say thank you to them
all
so
right.
much.
Cindy, that's a great call. Tip of the cap to BCA for that program. So thanks to everybody there at Burlington City Arts for Art from the Heart. Zach, we got about a minute left. What are some events that people should be on the lookout for in the next several months or year out of BCA?
Totally. So the big one that we've already talked about, and I'll just recap it again, is Highlight, the New Year's Eve event. So right now we're in the Bright Idea Project phase where we're looking for your ideas. We have a poster and an ad in 7 days that say, we want your ideas, and that is the truth. So we're looking for the community to jump in with us and help produce a great New Year's for everybody, both online and in person. So the application process for the Bright Idea Project ends November 1st, and that is also the day that tickets go on sale for both a in-person button and a virtual pass. And then that event is obviously on New Year's Eve, which is amazingly enough a Friday this year. December 31st is a Friday, so that's nice. Good for us. And then beyond that, we are doing another winter market in City Hall Park. That's a collaboration. Well, there's two elements to that. A long-running winter market, which starts the weekend after Thanksgiving and goes until the weekend before Christmas, is a collaboration with Love Burlington. And so we have, there'll be 15 vendors out there in City Hall Park with some beautiful market sheds built by the generator. We started that on a smaller scale last year, and this year it's bigger and better, longer shopping time, more vendors out there. So that starts the weekend after Thanksgiving. And then in that time period, we also have the annual BCA Holiday Artist Market, and that will happen on December 10th and 11th. Again in City Hall Park, and that is a similar event to the winter market, but there's actually more vendors. Probably about 26 artists will be presenting out there on that weekend. So that is a great event. As we've been saying, it does all of our programming really both benefits the community, making these artists available to them, but also artists do a terrific amount of business in those markets.
And all right, that's Zach Williamson, John Flanagan from Burlington City Arts. Thank you both for being here.
Awesome. Thanks,
Rick. All right, take care. Hey, don't forget today at 11:30, special time for the governor's COVID-19 response news conference. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
At the Warren Store, we are busily preparing for the coming season of gatherings with family and friends. Upstairs, we have a stunning selection of Vermont's Laura Zindel pottery to grace your holiday table and a beautiful new line of honey-infused skincare. There are pillows and rugs to feather your nest and wooden jigsaw puzzles, toys, and games. Catan, anyone? Always free gift wrapping and still the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. So come for lunch in our Rockin' Deli and treat yourself to unique, fashionable finds upstairs. Open 7:30 to 5 daily. Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Village and WarrenStore.com.
This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. All right, we've got open phones this half hour, 244-1777, 877-291-8255. Sox are the big story if you want to talk Red Sox. You know, we've been playing with house money in these playoffs. The signings we made or didn't make in the offseason, the few trades at the deadline. This was kind of a bridge year. This was one of those years where the Red Sox said, we're not going to compete. You know, we were really crappy last year, which was a total blow-off season. But, we really didn't make big signings. Garrett Richards and Garrett Whitlock, but there were Ottavino. You know, there were just a few people they brought in. Nothing major, no big turnarounds. Franchi Cordero. Marwin Gonzalez. Now, Kike definitely, proved to be a great acquisition. But it was a season of keeping your powder dry. But somehow we held on for dear life, made the wild card playoff, beat the Yankees, consider the moves they made and the people they brought in. They were certainly headed to the World Series. It's a damn funny game, but somehow we're still playing, and the Yankees and the Rays are not now. So if you want to talk Red Sox, I'd love to hear, did you stay up last night and see that walk-off sack fly, probably the most exciting sack fly you'll see in a season? What else? Foliage. You want to talk foliage? Apples. We can talk apples. Let's clean something up from yesterday. And when we were talking apples with Terry Bradshaw. So Mike called in from Morrisville yesterday. And during the open phones, he called, said his grandfather taught him to hit the trunk of the apple tree with a stick or board in the spring. said it would stimulate it into activity and not to hit it so hard that you were breaking the bark off. So when Mike called in and asked, you know, is this a thing? Is this just a myth that, or maybe it's just something my grandfather made me do to keep me, you know, out of his hair? Our apple expert, Terry Bradshaw, was already gone when Mike called, but I did email Terry after the show, and here's what he said. He said, I have indeed heard that, and it makes some sense. We do a version of that with razor blades by scoring the trunk. The trick is to damage the phloem just enough so that the photosynthates from the leaves can't go down to the roots and instead accumulate at the top of the tree, which often gets put into fruit buds, which is more positive for apple production. So, Mike, the answer, yes, get the stick out, get the board out, start smacking the side of that apple tree, and enjoy yourself because apparently that is a thing. All right, 244-1777, 877-291-8255 are our numbers, 877-291-TALK. Also from yesterday's show, we were talking about scams. We had Elliot Greenblatt on, who I am going to bring back probably in about 3 or 4 weeks as we get closer to the holidays because, quite frankly, you just have to know, again, you have to be reminded, and if you didn't hear yesterday's show, you will hear some of the warnings, things to look out for. And Beth wrote and said, I just had to thank you for having yesterday's guest from AARP. She says, I never thought I'd say that. Speak about the digital scams. I've never had emails from Amazon. Today, she got two. Each included my zip code in the subject line, which is a smidge disturbing. It sure is. But I just deleted them. Me being me, I would probably not have done that had I not heard your guest yesterday, and I've now stopped responding to junk texts with a particularly favorite phrase. I can imagine what that is. So thank you so much for yet more interesting and useful information. Beth, thanks for writing. That makes me so happy. I'm going to let Elliot Greenblatt know as well that he has now saved you from some of the scams that come your way. So if you didn't hear yesterday's show, you can listen to the podcast at WDEVradio.com. But really, if something smells wrong, like it did there for Beth, where you get something from Amazon or eBay or somebody like that, and first thing, look at the address of the sender. And a lot of times it might be from gmail.com. Well, Amazon, eBay, they're not going to send something from an address like that, right? It'll be from eBay.com or Amazon.com. That's your first hint that, uh-oh, that is not really from them. But the other thing is, don't click on that link. Do not go right back. They're going to be asking you for information. And boy, do they love that data. Do they love getting your name, your email, your passwords. So Elliot says, step away if it doesn't look right. Hey, we've got a package for you that you need to claim or it's going to be delivered. We just need this bit of information. Yeah, they're not going to do that. So that is some of the things you should be looking out for that are definitely digital scams, email-related scams. They also do now sending a lot through texts that they want you to click on a link. And what you're doing is basically coughing up information, sending it right back to whomever is phishing for your data. So be very careful. You can go to the AARP website too and see what is what some of the scams are. But we'll get Elliot back in here for a full hour next time and even go deeper into where all that phishing is going. All right. We can talk Red Sox baseball, foliage, scams, apples, whatever you're doing out there. It's been really great to see a lot of you know, our tourist business seems to be back and robust, and we are rewarding out-of-state tourists this year, of course, with our congeniality and the great hospitality that Vermonters always display. But beautiful weather and what looks like truly a great crop of leaves and a decent crop of apples. One thing Terry Bradshaw mentioned yesterday was we had some stresses, you know, back in the spring and in the summer when apple trees need things to be just right. They were a little stressful. So, you know, there are some varieties that are doing better than others, but it'll be probably a decent season, apple season, but, you know, not particularly robust, pretty average. We can talk Red Sox baseball. If you stayed up last night, I'd love to hear what you thought about that game and the series and what they might do against either the Astros or White Sox. Those guys were rained out yesterday. Still 2-1 Astros. They're playing in Chicago today. I apologize to Hunter Renfro. Thanks to Danny McGivergan, the director here, who I did forget that we did sign Hunter Renfro, a guy who usually batted for low average but had some power, had an awfully good season. Of course, he was with the Rays last year, so kind of came back to haunt the Rays. And, you know, there's one thing I learned about him when we had the special day for Dustin Pedroia. Hunter Renfro's first name is Dustin. It's Dustin Hunter Renfro. So, you know, maybe we have that good mojo of Dustin Pedroia. We have a Dustin on the team, Dustin Hunter Renfro, who has had a good season. But you got to be – I mean, this is the kind of team you love, right? A team that nothing was expected of them. What do we think? Maybe 81 wins, you know, with 500 season after the absolutely, you know, bottoming out of last year. You know, you bring back Alex Cora. He does have a way of getting things out of certain players, and so you knew we'd get a bump and maybe get to 500 this year. But we didn't sign, you know, any big stars at the trade deadline. We did bring in Schwarber, which was a good pickup, but again, we didn't go crazy. We didn't get you know, like the big ones that the Yankees brought in, and somehow this team, even though they had a massive dip in the middle of the season after getting out to a great start, somehow this team held on. You got to remember, we tied with the Yankees for the wild card spot, and just one game back, the Blue Jays and the Mariners were lurking. And so we didn't sew it up until the final game of the season. Luckily, we finished with the Orioles and the Nats. And even then, we lost a couple to the Orioles in that series. So finished 4-2 at the end, but just good enough, to get into the wild card, beat the Yankees. And then this was the shocker for a lot of people, because the Rays have shown their mettle. I mean, they have shown they're a great organization. They do things a little differently. They, you know, all four starters from last year's World Series, which they lost to the Dodgers, all four of their starters, not in the lineup. Some have been traded. Some are injured. One was left off the roster. And so, you know, here they are back in, you know, they win the East pretty handily. And in, by most accounts, they should have beaten the Red Sox, you know, maybe in four games, maybe in three. And, instead the opposite happens. Here we are. It is, the Red Sox heading on to the ALCS waiting for the winner of the Astros, or the, White Sox. Oh yeah, Hunter Renfro. There is a spelled last name spelled differently, but there's also a wide receiver on the Las Vegas Raiders named Hunter Renfro. But I don't think his first name is Dustin like our Hunter Renfro. Let's see what else. We got the open phones open for a few more minutes. Wild game suppers will be happening again in a few places next month, usually right as deer hunting season starts. You get a lot of it. I know Danville and Tynemouth. Those are two that I have attended. I've been to one in Bolton, but I don't think that's an annual event. But if there's any others you can tell me about, I would love to know. I love going to Wild Game Suppers. And the one in Danville is the oldest in the state. And they're still trying to decide this year if they're going to do like a drive-through where you just, I don't know, what they give you some of the different pies and the mashed potatoes and vegetables and you take it home, or if they'll be able to have it there in the basement of the church in Danville. But I hope to go to that one. Tin Myth, put on by the fire department, and they do a wonderful job there. That one, you just kind of walk in anytime from like 3 to 7, get in line, grab a plate, and the firemen are dishing it up for you and all kinds of different things, sauerbraten, meatballs, crazy things. All right, let's head to Randolph, and we've got Mary joining us. Hey, Mary, what's going on?
Hi, Rick. Yes, good. I'm back in Vermont. I've been away for a couple of weeks taking care of my mom, so it's good to hear your voice.
Thanks.
Down in Rupert, Vermont, down near Manchester, we lived there for a few years. They used to have a fantastic hunter's dinner.
Oh, yeah?
All sorts of things. I can remember making the bear meatballs one year because everybody in town kind of pitched in. And, yeah, so that's a good spot.
All right, Rupert, I'll look for that. Now, I'm glad you brought up bear. Did you have some of those bear meatballs?
I did.
And what did you? Yeah, what do you think of bear?
It's not something that I would maybe put on my menu all the time, but if it was available, and I would have it.
Yeah,
and meatballs were good.
Yeah,
they were good.
And now I guess the key with bear is you have to have somebody who field dresses it right and prepares it right. But over in Danville, they do the big pies. And the bear pie is so good, it usually is gone by the middle of, like, the second seating. They usually would do, like, a 5, 6, and 7 o'clock seating. And, if you don't get there in the first couple seatings, you're not getting any bear pie.
So. Yeah, well, and look up Rupert, see if they're still doing that. And go Sox!
All right, go Sox. I love it, Mary. How's your mom doing? Everything okay?
She's coming along. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling, Mary.
Thanks, Rick.
Bye. All right. Bye-bye. Yeah. Rupert, I got to know if they have a hunter's dinner, a wild game supper. I'll look that one up. I know Bradford used to have a big one. That's been written about, I think, in like the New York Times or New Yorker. There was a big story done years ago about the Bradford one, but I don't know if that's still a thing. They've kind of disappeared. Some come and go, like the Bolton one, which was put on by a hunting club, and they had a lot of crazy different things. I think I had squirrel stew and a real mix of things. But if you are adventurous like I am in eating and you want to try different things, a wild game supper or hunter's dinner are the way to go here in the fall in Vermont. And, of course, I'll be spreading the news about any I find out about. Danville's selling tickets already, and that one usually sells out. All right, and where are we going next? We are going to Corinth. Oh, our buddy Wade. How you doing, Wade?
Hey, good morning, Rick. Good morning. Yeah, you just mentioned the Bradford Wild Game Supper.
Yeah.
Wild Game Supper. And my grandfather, Dick Shearer, my mother's dad, was quite a hunter, trapper, logger. And him and his camp buddies, hunting buddies, always used to have their own beaver suppers. And my grandmother, who was a devout member of the church down here in Bradford where they have it and it benefits there, reluctantly from him, twisted his arm to get down there and start that wild game supper with some of the stuff he was cooking.
Oh,
for his camp buddies, and that thing took off and is still going, I believe. I think they skipped it last year, COVID. Not sure this year, but it'd been so many decades, old. But, yeah, beaver, coon, things they could get from the state. You know, animals been killed on the highway, hunted out west. They had quite a variety. They had the colored toothpicks so you could identify what you're eating. So yeah, my grandfather helped start that with some of his buddies with a little persuasion from my grandmother.
I love
it. That thing really took off, and people come from all over the world to come see that.
Did you? Yeah, that was the one I think that got the most notoriety. Did you enjoy it? Do you go?
I've gone a few times. Went once in a while. My grandparents have long since passed, and I haven't been down there since. And talk about world class. I went both to Lake Willoughby and to Cannon Mountain, New Hampshire, this weekend, and talk about an international event. We've seen people and met people this weekend from every corner of the globe.
Oh, Wade, that makes me so happy.
Here for that. And the best part about the high peaks in New Hampshire is if you look west, you can see Vermont.
That's right.
Great. Have a good one.
All right. Take care. All right. Sounds like the Bradford Wild Game Supper is still going. I'll check on Rupert. Danville, I know, is going. I'll also check on Tynemouth and Bolton, and we'll see. I will give updates. I am a big fan of the Wild Game Suppers in the fall here in Vermont. All right, Danny, let's shut it down. We'll close the phones. That is our show for today, Vermont Viewpoint, directed by the one and only Danny McGivergan. Our email address is vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com, and please feel free to suggest topics or guests. You can listen to past episodes in our podcast. WDEVradio.com is where you'll find it, and it is sponsored by The Warren Store. Funky, friendly, and almost world famous. Bill Sayre's up next with Common Sense Radio. Only a half hour, because today the governor's COVID-19 response news conference is going to start at 11:30. It's a special time, 11:30 with the governor's conference there. Tomorrow we've got Archer Mayer. His new book is called The Marked Man. So he'll be on at 9 o'clock tomorrow here on WDEV. I'm Rick Sengary. I will meet you back here tomorrow.